Yeah. Thanks for joining me, Dan.
You're welcome.
Real pleasure. You're a fucking creative wizard who's responsible for many, many things from fashion to restaurants. What is your favorite creative ventures been over the last?
DJing would be my favorite. Like music, I just love music, all bits about it. DJing's really fun.
Yeah.
Making music's really fun. Fashion is great. And I thought that's what was my calling. But there's a lot of hard work and a lot of problems, unforeseen circumstances. It's not all glamorous.
Right.
It's kind of tough. It's really fun though.
Yeah.
But music's just pure and it's awesome.
So I wanted to talk, just dive into your journey, because like I basically saw you on Instagram posting about your recovery from your injury. Can you give us, you know, your life up until that point?
So I was a kid, grew up on the Northern Beaches with a very loving and supporting family. I had dreams of being a professional bodyboarder. So I surfed every day and night since I was 12 till I was 18. And dreamed of going to Hawaii. So did odd jobs over a year and finally got to Hawaii when I was 17, like end of school. So I just had turned 17. And that was great. Went with a little crew of friends of mine who all been really successful, like world champion 3 times. Ben Player was. He was part of our original crew.
Oh,
we
yeah.
all had dreams together to be these force of bodyboarders taking over the world. Anyway, went to Hawaii. That was great fun. So Pipeline got held underwater underneath a cave for a long time, nearly drowned. Surfed Waimea Bay, the shore break one night, got my fins ripped off and dragged out to sea and nearly drowned again. Like I had near death in Hawaii, and that was great. That was a good intro to life,
great.
You know? It just kind of made you feel that nothing to be afraid of after that, you know?
Yeah,
I think
wow.
that's where my life...
At 17.
At 17. So I went there for 3 years in a row, and that was going to be my life, right? Mm-hmm. So I was dead set on becoming a professional bodyboarder, and I just loved the ocean, and it was all I lived for the ocean. I didn't chase girls. I didn't party. I had none of that. It was just all about the beach. And then when I was 20, I got a fin chop on my elbow. Cut my tendon in half and then I couldn't bend my elbow for the year.
Right.
So that kind of put a pause to my bodyboarding career. And then while I was not moving my elbow for the year, I could surf and swim and stuff. But a friend of mine took me out to the city and I went nightclubbing for the first time. And that is where my life turned, like second chapter of my life. I walked into the nightclub and I was like, well, this is where I'm supposed to be. This is my home. I fell in love with the girls. I fell in love with the music. I fell in love with everything about it, all in the fashion. So from then on, I went clubbing every weekend for months and months.
Surfing the nighttime.
So I was fully surfing the nighttime. And I just loved everything about it. I really felt like I was home. This is like where I was supposed to be. So I was working for a photographer at the time as his assistant. He'd lost his license drink driving, so I was driving him to meetings in the city. I lived on the Northern Beaches, so it's like an hour into the city.
Hmm.
And he would be in meetings, and I was stuck in the car while he was in his meetings for hours at the end, and got out some scrapbooks and started drawing clothes. I have no idea why, but I loved fashion from nightclubbing, and I was like sewing my own little disco shirts, like sequins fabric that I'd buy from Spotlight and make my own little disco top and stuff. Anyway, I started making these little labels. So I made a surf label to start with, and then I made a jeans label, and then I made a wedding dress label, and I attempted to make a fashion label. These are all in my head that I made the things. So I made like yeah. 5 different books of yeah. all these labels that I had, and I did like design the logo, and then I designed the range, and then I did like a marketing plan, and I had like all of these different books for all my different labels in my head. So and then I decided that maybe I should do fashion as a thing. So I decided photography probably wasn't my thing. Being assistant, it's not that glamorous either. And yeah,
you're never doing any work. You're just designing fashion
in
the car.
I was holding lights. And no, I was like changing batteries and holding lights yeah. on penthouse and billabong shoots. It was like, that was fun. But I just didn't think that was my next step. So yeah. I wanted to go to a fashion design course. So they've got the one at East Sydney TAFE, which is the best one to go to in Sydney, I guess, in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
But it needed a year of work experience and a portfolio. So I worked at Marks and Diesel for a year. And that was great. And I did my portfolio over the year and I finally got into East Sydney. And
fuck, this is all before like what, 20?
This is when I was 20.
Yeah,
no, it was like 20 to 21.
21.
So then I got into East Sydney. I spent a week in school. I did a couple of holiday courses and I did love being there. And I just I just love the idea of it all. But when I got actually into school and just, it was like everything in the holiday courses was like covering everything, and it was drawing and color and like fabrics, and it like it covered everything. But then at school you just like spend the day on one thing, and I was like, this is so boring. And the teachers came up to me and goes, you know, you've pretty much done this all of this whole year by what you've presented in your portfolio.
Yeah.
So maybe you should just go and do what you wanted to do. Like, you seem like you want to do a label, but you should just go and do it. And I was like, what do you mean? And he goes, you're not that good at drawing, and that's the only thing you'll learn here. Everything else, you're just going to be bored. You're already bored. Just leave. And I was like, are you firing me? Are you kicking me out? I felt really bad. And he goes, no, I'm giving you a gift. He goes, please, just go. He goes, you'll be the best student I never had. And I was like, really? And he goes, yep, do it. Just follow your dream. So I did. And then my George Goro, who I did Subi with, we were doing all kinds of things. We had this little creative weekend on the northern beaches. So we'd get friends that were singers, musicians, poetry writers, chefs, photographers. We'd all like sit around at someone's house and just spend the day creating things. Like, with someone would cook food and someone was writing songs, another person's writing poetry, people are painting, and I was drawing clothes, right? And we had big, like, all of this crew from the Northern Beaches have all gone on to do something fantastic. Whether it be chefs, world famous chefs, musicians, Chris Earle and Campbell, who started Monster Children, like, everyone's gone in to do their little thing. So we were wanting to do something and become something bigger than the Northern Beaches was. So we were importing blind sunglasses at the time, which is this brand from LA that like Lenny Kravitz and Madonna and stuff was all about, the big goggly ones. And we had a booth at the Fashion Week to show the sunglasses, and Fashion Week girls said that the people next to us had cancelled, so did we want their booth? And I said, well, we've only got 12 pairs of sunglasses, like, thanks for the offer, but what are we gonna do with it? She said, I don't know, like, why don't you do something creative? And then I was like, fuck, maybe I should do this label that I've always wanted to do. And she goes, yeah, I'd love to see it. So spent a couple of weeks coming up with this label that didn't exist yet. But my girlfriend at the time, her dad ran Lee Jeans and Amco in Australia, so he put me in contact with some denim makers. I drove out there and we designed a couple of pairs of jeans on some dodgy illustrations and had the sample that I'd like to go off. And anyway, we got some samples of some jeans made. We made a bunch of t-shirts and screen printed them in our garage, and we made a little collection. It was like 8 t-shirts and 4 pairs of jeans. It came up with the name Subi, which we were going through all kinds of names. One that we're close to was going to be called Run Sally Run, because I had a really feminine running style. We figured that, like, maybe that would alienate a male customer, and no one would really understand the joke. We wanted to call it Robot, but the Robot was owned by a kids' pajama line. And then we loved this band called Sukia. And Oscar Wright, who was one of our partners in the beginning, he said, let's do a name like that. Doesn't mean anything, but we'll come up with a name. So Sukia turned into Subi, spelt with Subi, like S-U-B-I. And then Oscar said, why don't we sell it with the T? It's like Tsunami, it would be a silent T. And we're like, yeah, it looks great. So wrote it out, and that was kind of it. Just a name that didn't mean anything, but would describe our movement that was going to become a movement. There wasn't a movement yet, but it was inevitably going to be one. So we called it Subi. We had a creative night in Oscar's garage where we screen printed more t-shirts and like read a bunch of poetry and scribbled on jeans and like tidied up our collection, or not the opposite of tidied up, messied up our collection to show at Fashion Week, and showed it in our booth, and people kind of went nuts for it. And we got some stores overseas, and big store in Sydney, YPV. He was a big supporter in the beginning, so he did quite a big order. So we spent the next year making jeans to fill those orders, grinding all the jeans on my balcony. Every day we'd make jokes that we were like the blue Smurfs because we're covered in blue denim dust. Had no idea about any of the process about doing it. I think that's why it was such a success, is because it all came from just experimentation. We just basically just wanted to get to an end point, and then we'd figure out how to get there without knowing anything of the in-between. And the processes we used, people didn't understand how we could get to there, because everyone just had their formulas, but we went against the formulas and we came up with new ways of doing things. And so anyway, Subi was going pretty good, and we got offered to be in a show, Young Designer Show, that next year. That was the year 2000, And we had these giant, again, big dreams about doing this show. So we presented what our ideas was, and one of them was we wanted to release rats on the runway. And then they're like, hey, we can't fit rats on the runway because you've got six other designers in this new generation show. And said, and we want the lights to fall down, and we want this to break, and we want this to happen. And they're like, this is a giant show. Like, you guys need to do your own show, but you're only this is a brand new startup brand. You're not going to be able to fill this entire place. This is where the big designer show, like Peter Morrissey shows there, like fits 2,000 people.
Yeah.
And we threw parties at the time, and I said, if you give us a spot and we can do our own show, I guarantee we'll fill it. And so they believed in us, and they gave us a spot. They called it New Generation 1 and New Generation 2. So they did the New Generation show with the five designers, and then we did our own New Generation show and released the rats and did all that.
Released the rats.
Yeah, it was fun. We had some big dreams, and we crammed them all into a 20-minute show, but it was great. We filled the room. We had a couple of thousand kids there, people, everyone drinking beer in the front row. It was it was a whole bunch of fun. It was like a giant party, but it was a great show too. I saw it the other day, and it's pretty amazing. It was naive, but raw and pure and just awesome. And it's stuff that people are doing now in fashion. It's it was, even back then, it was very spot on. Anyway, that was good. So did that. Subi went great for the next 5 years. It was awesome. The next 5 years after that would awesome. We went to America. We're going to sell to a big company in America. Spent a lot of time over here negotiating a big deal. Things at home weren't going so good. We didn't realize they were. Came back, found out they weren't. Partnered with some people. They weren't the right people to partner with. Long story short, lost Subi overnight pretty much. And we had nothing to say about it, and it was just kind of gone. So that was that chapter gone. Around that time, I met my wife. And just my love went to her, not to Subi, and I just kind of had left it anyway, just was happy to move on from it. So the next chapter of my life was with her, and traveled with her for 10 years. She was modeling, and the modeling world's tough when you're young. So I just was around to help her with that, and just DJed a bunch and did that for the next 10 years. And after we were married, we decided we'd make a rosé wine. It was one of our little first couple things to do. That went pretty good. And then we started a pajama line that was going pretty good. And then we went to Paris to shoot a video for our pajama line, and I fell out of the hotel we were shooting the video at and landed on the road on my feet.
Whoa.
And broke every bone from my feet to the middle of my back, T5 vertebrae. And my body fell down, crushed all my bones, and then my head hit the road, and then I broke my jaw, and then I died, and then got put into an ambulance, and then I came back to life and was in a coma for a couple of weeks in Paris, and then had 10 operations to put my body back together, and then woke up. I don't really remember waking up, but woke up sometime in Paris in the hospital a month later, and spent 3.5 months on my back in Paris, and then told that maybe I'm never going to walk again. So I came back to Australia in a wheelchair, and then I was in Australia for 2 months maybe, staying at my dad's house. He lives up the coast. And on the 6 month anniversary of my death, it was a really sunny day, and I looked outside. I could kind of stand and crutch around the house a little bit, but couldn't walk yet. But I looked outside and I was like, fuck, I'm going to surf today. I told my dad, and he said, okay, we can try. So he carried my board down the water, and I crutched down and paddled out, and then I stood up on a wave and thought, fuck, this is awesome. I'm just going to forget about anything. I'm just going to get better. So from then I felt pretty great in my head. That was a big milestone. So from then I just worked on my body and my mind and my soul and did that. And by Christmas time, I was walking with no crutches, and even I was even DJing. There's a lot of stuff in between. I DJed at a big party in LA, like a big famous party with LCD Sound System in November with no crutches. But I got better pretty quick.
Wow.
For what happened, I was not supposed to be better this quick, but I worked really hard at it. But
how long ago was it to this day?
What is it now? In 1 week, it's going to be 1 year and 5 months.
Right, right. Wow. Wow. And you were told you were never going to walk again? Or
I don't know.
To that effect?
I was in the hospital. I was on heaps of morphine in the hospital, so I don't really remember much of being actually even in the hospital part, but that was thrown around a lot.
So,
But I came back to Australia in the wheelchair, but I also couldn't get on the plane unless I could walk with the crutches, so they kind of taught me to walk one afternoon before I got on the plane with crutches. So I'm guessing that I was going to be without the wheelchair, but I couldn't walk at all when I was in Australia. I still had to go back to hospital and spend a couple of weeks in Australia on my back.
It's phenomenal. It's such a drastic change in your reality. Mm. Like, from all this amazing, you're bold with your living. So how many stories did you fall?
4 stories, so 60 feet.
Fuck me.
Yep.
Can you remember the moment you fell, and what, is there any thought going through your mind?
No, so I, with the injury, like what happens, your brain, PTSD happens to anyone that goes through a big accident like that, and your brain just wipes that out. So that's wiped out everything. I don't even remember, like, the only thing I remember is leaving from the house in LA, shutting the Uber door for my wife, and I have got 20 minutes of a memory in Paris that night when I was getting my hair braided, and I remember that the name of the restaurant we're going to dinner at, and that's all I remember.
Whoa.
So I don't, yeah, nothing. I've been doing a lot of work to try and get back, to try and remember, but I'm remembering a little bit more now, but not anything that's like much
significant.
I remember a little bit of what the room looked like. That's pretty much.
But your wife was with you at the time, or your friends were with you at the time when it happened, or did, like, can they recount what the emotions were?
No.
Well, I suppose when you woke up in hospital, what was that first kind of feeling or thought that came to your mind?
So I don't really remember when it was the wake up moment, because it was all a bit blurred.
Yeah.
When I was thought I was so present in the hospital, and I remember bits of it, but even when I got out, even the hospital in Australia, I don't really remember now. Like,
so drugged up as well.
So drugged up. The nurse, no, the psychologist in Australia said, I've just read your chart. You're on a heap of painkillers and a lot of morphine when you're in Paris. You should probably call your family and apologize. And I was like, yeah, I've apologized for a bunch of stuff. I don't think I was being that nice. She goes, no, you should probably call them again. You would have been awful. That's not normal. Then they call it the morphine monster. And you just do out of body, out of the ordinary things. And I was just, yeah, I didn't really know, but I was not being nice.
Oh, man.
And then, so I don't really remember a wake-up time. I remember for a lot of friends visiting me. I remember, see, my wife was there the whole time. My brother was there, flew, like, as soon as he heard about the accident. So he was there he flew home with me. My mum came for a good chunk of it in the middle, like 6 weeks maybe. And I remember all of that. I remember friends from here visited me. I remember, like, changing hospitals. I remember, I don't know, it's all such a blur now looking back at it. It's like that was another life, really.
Oh, it's such a huge, abrupt transition. It's like almost, not psychosis, but, you know, like, it's something that's so rapidly, it's such a rapid shift for your nervous system to adapt. Like,
yeah.
I can't even imagine that level of trauma and shock on your whole anatomy. When were the kind of steps where you had moments to reflect and moments to go, all right, what am I going to do now kind of thing? Because there'd be moments, I imagine, of absolute, what's the point, maybe?
Yeah, there's a few of what's, no, there was a lot of what's the point moments, but then I just something in me knew that I was going to get better, and maybe I did not realize how serious it was. So I definitely in the beginning, because I was talking all kinds of rubbish, like pretending that I'm fine. No, I just went upstairs. I had meetings upstairs. I'm like selling pajamas throughout the whole hotel, and I was getting mad that, like, no, you might never be walking again. Dan, this is serious. And I'm like, no, I'm fine. And I don't know, defense mechanism or whatever it is, but
yeah.
I don't know what it is, but I never felt the extremeness of it, you know? And then I just felt like I needed to get on with doing stuff, because I've always worked for myself, and I got great support from my family and friends, but there's no one really to turn to if you, like, need to pay bills and keep living, you know what I mean? So I just felt like I had to get back at doing stuff. So I was planning all these kinds of things. Even when I got back, even in the hospital in Paris, I had diaries and diaries of books I was going to write and hotels I wanted to open. And like, I had big plans. And it was just like, dude, you should just recover and get better. So I got back to Australia. I was still thinking that I was going to be doing all this work. I was like, talking about writing a book about Subi and then other life stuff. And then I was writing resumes for jobs overseas, like all kinds of stuff that everyone was like, just get better. And I'm like, yeah, I'm getting better, but not until the day that I surfed. And then I would realize that I did have work to do, but I could get better. And then I kind of put it all on hold after that.
Mm.
And that was when I stopped thinking so much that I needed to rush into doing work. They just like concentrate on the body.
Mm.
And then I was working again by Christmas. So that was a few months. But in the big scheme of life and what happened to me, it wasn't really like a whole heap of time.
Yeah.
But I did have a few months concentrating on just the body and the mind.
But you're doing that still. That's a continual.
Yeah, it is now.
Yeah.
Yeah. So but I've been working a lot now. I've been really busy, but I take time out for myself and for my spirit and for my exercise as well. Mm. So, yeah, it's definitely changed things about how I look at things, but still back busy at work.
Mm.
But, so I'm in a different type of busy now.
Mm. We also look for like the reason and meaning, I guess, and purpose of it. Do you do that or do you not really explore that kind of stuff?
No, I did for sure. I've seen a lot of different people like healers and psychics and psychologists and psychiatrists. And I've come to peace with why it all happened. Like it definitely needed to happen because I was living a life that was no consequences. Like I've had a pretty blessed life. Works came, monies came, like all of it's come and go, by the way. It's not like I've lived a rich life, but like worked hard as a kid, made a bunch of money, fell in love, married the girl of my dreams. She even like that even went, you know, comes and goes, but life goes on and I'm happy for it. And I just figured life would just keep circling like it did. But this time around, it wasn't going to come back without working at something. And then I needed to realize this was needed to be a bit of a wake-up call for me to realize what's important in life, not to take things for granted and not things just don't work out always for everyone, you know? I think I just needed to have a little bit of a slap in the face. You're like, wake up, dude. That I'm like, there's a lot to it. Like a lot too much to talk about right now, but it was definitely happened for a reason and I'm at peace with the reason for it. Yeah.
Good. That's really good because that's the biggest thing to move forward, isn't it? I think when you find the reason or the purpose or what the learning is, I guess, because there's learning in everything. I suppose it's like you're in creation mode constantly, but like the maintenance was kind of short-lived, I guess. Now you're in a state where the maintenance needs to be on your body particularly, needs to be like more consistent to look after yourself and like cherish your anatomy. I suppose it must make you really feel thankful for your body.
Yep, definitely. That's one thing. No, there's a lot that I didn't take seriously enough, but I had no regard for my body. I was lucky that I've been quite healthy and done really well at sports and I've never really been sick. But my body, I never thought about how precious your body is until you're in a wheelchair and you can't walk and you're taking your son bowling and you can't bowl a bowling ball and it hits the side of your wheelchair and falls on the floor. It's like really humbling. it's crazy. I never would have thought I'd be in this position. And then once I was like, okay, that's part of the lessons that I need to learn as well, you know?
Yeah.
It's crazy. When you don't have the use of a body that you did have before, I'm sure it's hard for everyone who is in the position when they can't use parts of their body or use their body at all. It would be awful. Mm. It is awful. But I was just lucky that mine worked fine before and I didn't really care too much for it. And now I'm lucky that it works again, but I've worked this time at making it work again.
Can you talk us through the process where you go in your inner world, when you go through those moments of like maybe the bowling ball situation or like when you have a real moment of holy fuck, things are different for me now, or I've got a big new challenge, or like, is there grief? Is there sadness? Or like, is it a sense of loss or is it a sense of immediately, holy fuck, I've got something to overcome?
I don't exactly know how my mind works. It's really strong. I don't even know anyone that has got a mind as strong as mine because I don't know, it's like I can step out of myself and not feel sorry for myself or feel the pity and just like just know that it's going to get better. And my mind can work at 1 year's time from now with work and things like this, like as things are going to be happening and things are going to be great, so it's cool. But then I will have moments like when I was staying at my dad's house, we'd go shopping at Woolworths and I'd be in the wheelchair, and then we'd be like, I'd be wheeling along just you know, kind of, I guess, autopilot mode in the wheelchair. And then I'd go past and see my reflection. I'd be like, fuck, that's me in the wheelchair. I was like, oh my God, you're in a wheelchair, Dan. And I was like, oh my God. And I had heaps of moments. Even just recently, I was in New York and traffic everywhere. So I got out of the car and I was crutching up the street fast. Like, I'm pretty good on the crutches these days. I'm speeding past and I'm thinking, I was like, wow, you're so good on the crutches. And it feels, the crutches are really fun. They're like two legs in the air and just swing along. So I'm going past all these people. And
faster than everyone else.
So much faster than everyone else, going fast in the cars. And I looked in the mirror, like in the window of one of the shops, and I was like, flying on the crutches. And I was like, no, that's you, dude. And I was like, wow, that's me on the crutches. Wow. See, I've had like little moments. I got to feel sorry for myself, but there's so much worse shit in the world. Like, you know, like I was walking again. I'm in a wheelchair. I was in a wheelchair for life. That's bad. But my life has been fantastic before. I've got family that love me all around me, great friends. And if I'm in a wheelchair, that's sad, but there's plenty worse for other people. And I just can't feel sad about it. I had a psychologist that, See, I was seeing a lot of people. Mm. I had 10 different people I was seeing at one stage. Psychiatrist, neuropsychiatrist, psychologist, relationship counselor, chakra healer, clairvoyant.
Wow.
Kinesiologist. There's 10, right? Yeah. And I said to all of them, I said, I can't afford to work with you guys forever, both in time and in money. But until my foot, I had one of my feet was worse than the other one. They cut all the skin off one of my feet and that had to heal for a couple of months.
Yeah.
So, I said, until my foot's better, I'm going to give you all of you an equal chance and then we'll like choose what goes on. And my psychologist was like, what are you, Donald Trump? Is this the fucking whatever show it is? I don't watch TV. So I don't even know what I'm talking about. I'm like, whatever. What are you even talking about? What's called The Apprentice.
Yeah.
And I said, I don't know. She told me what it was. And I said, yeah, I guess like that. So anyway, they're all in a sliding scale in my head, who's going to be my right one. And everyone said my psychologist was the most important. She was the most expensive and she had the fancy office in the city. And we'd be talking, like, I'd see her each week, but, she wasn't the most important one.
Right. Who was?
My psychic. She's not, I guess, yeah, she's a psychic.
Yeah.
But she's like a life coach. She just offers like what might happen. Doesn't tell you what the future or anything, but tells you things that you go, how the fuck do you know? But maybe it's just obvious. I don't know how it works, but she just can tell me what's up and I feel it, and then she can help me coach through things. And I really believe in her. She's incredible. She's my number one.
Wow.
Kinesiologist was awesome. Chakra healer was awesome. All of the things on the spirit tip were all awesome. But yeah, I am.
Because it's the spirit that drives you, isn't it? Like, it's like the, once you get your inner world, your spirit aligned, it manifests outwards. You do the work outwards, and that's the strong mind that you probably got talking about. It's no wonder you're drawn to that stuff, because you got a strong mind, so a strong spirit.
Yeah. She'd be like, you're not taking this serious, like, you're not grieving on this accident. You don't grieve. You just collide over problems. Like, I'm like, dude, I fucking grieve. Like, I cry every day about my wife. I cry. My best friend died a couple of years ago and I grieved for months. I was the saddest I've ever been. Like, I fucking grieve. I know how to be sad, but I'm not sad right now because where I'm at, because you don't have work at the moment. I'm like, I don't want to work at the moment. I want to fix my body. And she's like, and this happened and this happened. And you're never going to be the same with you walking. I'm like, who fucking cares? Like, I'm alive and I'm happy with where I'm at, and I'm not going to sit in a room and feel sorry for myself for weeks and weeks. Like, if that's grieving, like, I'm sad all the time about things, but don't tell me how I'm supposed to deal with it. But apparently I glide over problems too easy and whatever. But my feeling was like, I read a lot. I don't really watch television, but I became more aware. So one thing that I learned is empathy. No, I read a book, a couple of books on it. I didn't even know what it meant. I didn't even know there was a word. I had sympathy for everyone. I would feel sorry for people all the time that they didn't have a life that was as good as mine.
Mm.
But, and I felt sorry for, you know, all like things that happened to
people
in the world. That, yeah, like all of the, like so many awful things go on in the world. But that was sympathy. But then I could never understand or feel what it would be like for other people. I still can't. No one can feel what it's going to be like for other people, what they go through. We don't have an idea of how awful it can be for some people. But I just didn't feel it. And once I started feeling it and I started realizing that my situation's great. Maybe my body's sore still now, but like things are fantastic. And I can't be sad about what's going on with me when there's people going through much, much worse. And that is the main thing that helped me not be sad about things. I have had some sad, really sad days, but after everything that I went through, like there ain't been enough. That ain't been the sadness I don't think that everyone was expecting me to have.
Is there any part of you that feels like you were not allowing it to all wash through you, the sadness, or you feel like...
That's what I got told by the psychologist, but I don't know.
I don't feel so, no.
I just don't... I could never get to that poor me feeling. This felt I don't deserve to be doing the poor me. I just also I don't like the poor me people. I've got people that I know, friends and whatever is it, like I just don't like complainers because there's so much worse stuff that goes on with other people. And when I just start hearing people bitching and whining about their problems and how busy they are and how tired they are because of this and that, it's like shut up. And then I've kind of was like that before, and then I didn't want to become one of those, so I don't feel I deserve to be whining, and that makes you not whine, and then you just kind of get on with it. I meditated for about 5 years before the accident, and then maybe about when I got married, around about the time I was telling everyone I was meditating, because I was diligently for a couple of years, and then I just wasn't. Maybe once a week, maybe a couple of times a week. Yeah. And it would be a month and I wouldn't have meditated. But I'm like, yeah, I meditate every day. And then I'm like, hang on, do you really? I was a bit like that. So then I thought, that's what I need to be doing again. But I couldn't meditate. There was so many thoughts, like heaps of thoughts. And so I listened to a couple of tapes, meditation tapes. My friend's got an app and there's heaps of guided meditations on it.
Yeah.
And so I listened to a couple and that was so easy to be in like that state and clear mind and not think about anything else. And then... but with all these beautiful little stories and things that would be make me really happy. So I did that a lot. I'd listen to like sometimes all day I'd listen to meditation tapes. Like that one, they're like most of them are about 10 minutes long. So some days I would listen to them for, I looked at my app, I listened to maybe 36 of them.
This is more meditation tapes than six, friends.
That's 6 hours worth of meditation tapes.
Wow.
But, things hey, like
what's
that.
The, what's the app that people might
want? Oh, it's called Insight Timer.
Great. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I use that.
And there's a lady on there called Sarah Blondin. She's Canadian and she's my best friend. I haven't met her yet.
Because you spent so much time listening to
her. I've spent so much. She's saved my life. She really has. She's the one, she's nearly solely responsible for bringing me out of any of my dark places. She's incredible. Wow. So my son plays video games and he's got these friends that he... like virtual friends that he plays video games with, and I'm sometimes like, who are you talking to? And he goes, oh, my friend, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, I don't know this kid. He goes, yeah, he's from Canada. I'm like, since when have you had a Canadian friend? He goes, oh, he's on my PlayStation friend. So he has all these virtual friends. So Sarah Blondin is my virtual friend. I feel like she's my great friend. So I tell people like, oh yeah, she's my friend. And people like, oh, they just think that she is, but I don't even actually know her. But she's my,
man, I want to get you down in front of her.
Internet friend.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was my key. If there was any like me giving advice for anything, no, or like you want to know how I got out of hard times, anytime it would get stressful I'd put this tape on and she would just chill me out. 10 minutes, it would just like totally make me happy. And then some I'd be like, maybe she's got like 15 different tapes and they're transforming fear, learning to surrender, discovering your intrinsic self, exploring the wilderness of discomfort, all kinds of themes, and they're all great little stories. And I just would just, I'd really like listen to every word and I'd be just engulfed in this story, and then I'd come out on the other side and I'd be like, hey, cool, what are you doing now? So when I was pre-accident Dan, so when I died officially, so I can call my old life and this is my new life, and that's how I refer to things.
Since you actually died, that's...
Yeah, clinically dead for 10 minutes apparently.
That's bonkers.
I know, right? And I didn't get to see any light because I can't remember anything.
Yeah, I'm, but the DMT would have been flooded anybody.
I know. I'm hoping I'm going to get there one day. but anyway, I'm here now. So that's the main thing. Anyway, I used to tease. I was always really nice, but I was just like, not a smartass. I don't know. I've always been a great person, but also
a bit of a rascal.
Yeah, but also could take the piss out on someone and just be like, no cares, you know? Yeah. So all these models would get this too shall pass as a tattoo, and I'd be like, oh wow, you got this too shall pass, wow. And I'd be making jokes about it all the time. It was my one thing, that one thing I loved to tease was that this too shall pass tattoo. And then in the hospital I was desperately depressed a few times, and someone said it to me. I was like, shut the fuck up. And then this did pass. And so I was like, wow, this too shall pass. So then I would think about it. And then I'd be like, okay, it's sad. It's heavy now, but this too shall pass. And I'd be like, this kind of makes sense. This is not a cliche of saying, it's a real thing. That's why it's, I think that's why it's a saying or whatever. So that became a kind of like silent motto to myself. And it really is true. So I would listen to this. Sarah Blondin, my virtual friend, my best friend, and I just think this too shall pass. And things like, I've had plenty of shit times. I can't pretend that I've been like, yeah, it's all good, things are worse for other people, but I've been happy the whole time, which is not been like that. It's been awfully sad. But to put things in perspective, sometimes I'd be like, okay, this is going to pass, and it always did. And then the next day's a new day, and then like, you're just happy to be alive, you know. And then as bad as things get, as they get really bad, if you just go, hey, you know what, just chill, this will pass. And then once it's passed, then you wake up, it's another sunny day, and then life goes on. So I was in Hawaii recently. I've got plenty of tattoos, like a lot of tattoos. I used to get them all the time, and my last tattoo was when my friend Adrian passed. I got one for him on my arm. A bunch of us got it, and that kind of was, I was feeling that was going to be my last tattoo, maybe because it was for him, and also because I just was done with tattoos and thought maybe I just don't need any more tattoos. So that was 5 years ago. And then I saw a tattoo shop and I was like, fuck, you know what I should do is get this too shall pass, just to get it, to like be a reminder to me, don't be a dickhead and don't tease people, because you might end up like them, because you're the person that you used to tease, and you should get it, you deserve to get it, to just like say sorry to everyone that you teased. And
that's great.
Also to never say never, because I was never getting a tattoo, and then also to remind me that this too shall pass. So it was my triple threat reminder to myself. Don't tease people because you might become one of them. Never say never, and this too shall pass. So there you go.
That's like probably the most meaningful tattoo I've ever heard.
Yeah. And then that opened up the, now I am allowed to get tattoos again. So after my accident and realizing who your friends are and realizing who sticks by you and who doesn't, you know, it was a good test. Not that I did it for a test. Not that I did anything. I don't even know what happened, but it's a test, right? So I don't know why it came about, but I all of a sudden just desperately wanted to get Dream on my forehead. And I was like, I'm doing it. And
whereabouts, just like
straight up on my forehead. Yeah, so I drew it. It looks great. Went to the shop. And then I thought, you know what? This is a good test, because and my dad said, mate, you don't want to see the reaction you'll get when you got a face tat. I'm like, I don't give a fuck. Like, if people don't like me with a face tat, then don't want to know them. And then I thought that one person that would give a fuck, or if he did, is my son. Because I don't know if a 12-year-old boy with his dad rocking around with a face tat in Sydney is the right thing to do. So I didn't do it for him. He's the only reason I didn't. But that was my next... I was like, I'm getting tattoos, I'm going to get a face tat. But anyway, I'm not getting my Dream tat.
Have you had any reactions from anyone that has had that tattoo that you've previously teased?
Not that I've teased, but I was in a meeting just recently for my fashion, and the girl that was in the meeting, she goes, "Oh my god, we've got matching tattoos." And I was like, "What?" She goes, "This too shall pass." And I was like, "Oh wow, this is great." And I told her the story, and she goes, "Okay, like, is this funny? Like, am I one of the ones that you would have teased?" And I was like, "You are totally the one that I would have teased, but I don't anymore." And she's like, "Okay, is this good or bad?" And I'm like, "I don't know. What? It's good. It's great, I think."
That's such a funny conversation.
Yeah.
Fuck, I think. And then it just ended a bit, like, awkward.
Yeah. So I was like, "Oh, yeah, we do. Yeah, great." But then I told the story and she's like, "Okay, cool. So I'm one of those girls that you teased." So, and then I felt a little bit bad about it. But anyway, it was cute in the end.
That's so funny, man. And so you said before we started recording that you're sober. So when did that come about in your life?
Like, I couldn't drink in the office hospital, obviously.
Mm.
And then I was pretty broken and pretty sick. Oh, not like, not sick is not the word, but yeah, whatever you call you, having a busted body, like not well.
Mm.
So I was working really hard at getting better. And then when I did the surf time, I was like, "Dan, you're going to get better. You can do anything you can to fix your body." And then I just was really serious about my eating and really serious about my exercise. And yeah, because just pre that, things just happened, everything worked out, and I just didn't try. I tried at a lot of things. I tried really hard. I worked hard at a lot of things, but things just seemed to happen, and maybe I just thought my body would just happen. But I thought, no, you got to work at this, and you got to like pay some attention. Your body deserves you helping it out, you know? Mm-hmm. So I thought maybe I won't drink now. So I make a rosé. Rosé was going to be arriving in Australia in about December. So I put that as my benchmark. I was like, when my rosé gets here, I'm going to be back on it. I couldn't wait. So a couple of moments in the wintertime in Australia, the doctor said, "Oh, it would be nice with you, sit with the old man, have a glass of red wine." And I was like, "Yeah, not going to have that yet. I'm going to wait till summertime." And then summertime came. I just didn't really feel like drinking it. And then one night I was talking with a guy that I was helping with his salad shop in Sydney. I designed the shop for a guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I was talking about my old work and Subi and things I'd done. And I said, "Oh, I also make a rosé." And he said, "Oh, great. Love to try it." And I said, "Oh, I've got it in the car, actually. I don't drink." But I was like, "Oh, fuck, you know what? I got no rules. And I'm going to drink soon. So let's have a bottle." So I had a bottle, had another bottle. And then my sober Dan is great. Pre-not sober Dan was great also. But sober Dan can stay up really late and it's got great ideas and like full of energy. And I don't go to bed before midnight. Maybe 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning is my like regular bedtime. And I wake up early and feel fantastic, right? So I was drunk and my stories weren't getting any funnier. Nothing was bad, but I just was just slow and just, they just like, eh, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it was 10:30 at night and I didn't feel like catching up with any friends or anything. I just went to bed.
Yeah.
And I woke up in the morning, I was like, "That was shit." I said, "What did it even do to you?" I was like, "You weren't even good." And I thought that's how I functioned. I thought every day at lunchtime, I'd be like, "Wow, when can we start drinking the rosé? This is going to be a great day." I was like, fuck, maybe that's just old life. And maybe you don't need it this life. So then I didn't have any more drinks for, that was December till February. Then we did some launches for the rosé. And I got poured a couple of glasses. And we had like 4 lunches in a row, and every day I'd get poured a glass and I'd look at it and I'd be like, "Okay, you know what that's going to do to me? And you're feeling great right now and you're really funny and everyone, like, conversation ain't a problem. And maybe you're just going to want to drink more of it and you're just not going to be any funnier and you're going to get tired. Not today." And then I didn't, and then I didn't again, and I didn't again. And then it's been a year and a half and now I have no desire. Like,
wow.
No rules, by the way, so like we could have a celebration drink after this and you get to see like old Dan.
Sleepy Dan.
Yeah, but I think sadly old Dan is just Sleepy Dan. I don't know.
Doesn't serve you anymore by the sounds of it. Like,
yeah, just like I'd never gave a chance to be sober before. Like I had like went away to places like India and like had some retreat type things and like had a few times off but never really paid attention. I just was waiting to like doing it to have a break because I thought my body needed it, but I was doing it to couldn't wait to start again. So I wasn't really paying attention of how good I was feeling in the in-between. And now it's gone. It's been so long and I just feel great and everything's working out for me like times 10 on what it was before. And maybe this is how I'm supposed to function. Maybe this is how I'm supposed to be. And I just didn't realize it before. Things were good, but I was always trying to figure out, I was trying to explain this to someone the other day. I was a week late for a deadline, a day late for a meeting. No, a week late for an email, day late for a meeting, an hour late for a plane, a minute late for a text message. I don't know, whatever it was. It was like, there was, everything was late. And I was stressed out all the time about being on time and too much work. Never could meet a deadline, like promising all of these things that I could just never deliver on them because couldn't fit them all in. But now I can promise on all these things and I can fit them all in because it ain't a problem.
Yeah.
And that's because I like doing a lot of different things. Like, I don't think that I'm particularly great at anything, but I think I'm really good at a lot of things. And that's just how I like to work. And, and in the working that way, you need to be able to juggle a lot of things and like deliver a lot of things on different timelines, but also it has to be sometimes at the same time. And being hungover and drunk and tired, you just let moments slip. Like, I can't afford to let a minute slip by. And being sober, you don't. And you see, like, people that do well, like, people that do really well, most of them are sober.
Yeah, just meditate, like, and don't drink.
It's like, it's not like a giant secret to the world. It's like anyone that's doing really good, like, unless you're super creative and you're having a moment.
Yes.
Cool. But if you're like constantly working hard and being great at being a baller, you're pretty much going to be sober. So I'm like, you know what? I think I've figured that out now and I'm happy to be it. So yeah, I don't know. Who knows? One day. But right now, don't really feel like it. That's all.
Yeah, it's great. It's good to just listen to the body, isn't it? That's one thing I think we get better at as you get older, is just like, what's my body want to do? Doesn't feel like it. I'm not going to do it.
Yeah.
So if you could go back to the psychic stuff, if you could try to break it down as to what it is for us to understand.
First insight. So I met her in an office in Sydney. I was on crutches with a boot on my foot. Looked like I was pretty skinny and looking like not the healthiest version of me, but you couldn't have told at all what I'd been through, right? And she was like, anyway, there's like too much to talk about the whole journey. But basically she sat me down and held my hand and we'd like talked a little bit of stuff. And she goes, wow, okay, welcome to your new life. And I was like, well, what do you mean? And then she goes, this is really like a new beginning for you. It really is. And I was like, okay. And she goes, oh God, I'm sorry. Have you physically died? And I was like, what the fuck? And I was like, silent now. And she goes, yeah, you have. Oh my God, it's awful. I'm so sorry. And how it happened to you, this is awful. It's like you've been hit with a sledgehammer. And I was like, no, I broke my foot. What are you talking about? And she goes, no, come on. You've been hit with a sledgehammer, or it's like you've been hit with a truck. Your body's gone through hell. And I was like, I don't know what you're talking about. And she goes, no, but...
You know, why were you playing it cool? Like, what are you talking about?
I was weirded out.
Just
right?
A bit skeptical.
I've never seen a psychic before. And and she goes, but you know, this is meant. This had was meant to happen to you. And unfortunately, like, the universe has been trying to wake you up for the last 10 years and nothing could wake you up. You've had a few friends die around you lately, haven't you? And I was like, maybe crying by now. And I'm like, maybe. Wow. And she goes, and you've had a few close calls yourself. And none of it would even wake you up. Like, nothing was going to wake you out of your dream life because you were having a hell of a time. And like, you were going to have a great life for it. It was going to be fun forever. But it would have been a life with not much purpose. But you're here for a proper reason. And this, the reason why you're alive in this vessel, in this body, why you've been kept alive in this body, because you were dead and you're supposed to be dead, is because you're here to do something proper. And your new life's going to be great. I'm sorry that you had to go through the lesson, but it was the only way you would wake up. And she goes, come on. And I was crying by then. She's like, come on, give me a hug. Welcome to your new life. And I was like, oh my God. And then she went on to, and it just went on for an hour of just like telling me stuff, like
amazing.
So much stuff. And anyway, now she doesn't hit me with the future stuff so much, but she just checks up on things like, how's this going on? And I'm like, how did you even know about that? Like, she calls me out of the blue and be like, I'm just thinking of you. What's happening right now? And it's something is happening at that time. And I'm like, wow. Anyway,
I want to see her.
I'll give you a number.
Yes, please.
She's a beautiful lady. Her name is Jean Claire.
Man.
She lives Tweed Heads.
I'm particularly interested in her reflections and how that's kind of changed your daily living, and the fact that she says you're here to do something proper. What did that how did that resonate with you, and what does that mean to you now?
It's really scary, and it gives you a whole sense of responsibility. I just am here to help people I've always helped people, but I'm here really to be here for people if they need help and not be living for myself the whole time.
Mm.
And I was never living for myself the whole time, but I've got a lot more time for other people and don't know what exactly it is, but I think it's just be a good person and help when help is needed, you know? Not like going out of my way to be doing, you know, like devote my life to saving the world, but anybody that needs a hand, I'm here for them. So when I did my Instagram story that you, how you saw me, I didn't talk to anyone for a year or no press or anything. Press in Australia is just bullshit and awful. And so I was, lots of people wanted to do a story a year later, but I thought maybe it's better to tell it in my own words. And that's the only channel that I knew because I hate Instagram anyway. I never even look at it, but that was like my way to get it out, you know? So that was the reason why it went on that. And it served its purpose. But from doing that, I've had so many people reach out, like so many people in their own, having their own struggles, like two people that have broken their back and are not walking again through accidents. A couple of people that have had their own depression problem. Like and then I'm talking with all of them all the time and I feel like I'm helping. I've got, there's like 10 people that I talk to regularly. And that's nice to do.
So cool,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, it's cool.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
And that's the purpose. Like, fuck.
Yeah, it's a little bit of the purpose. Like, there's more to it. But that's the beginning of it. But I feel like when things like that happen, I'm like, okay, maybe this is part of it.
Yeah.
And so it makes me feel good.
You obviously a powerful vessel. Like, you as a human being are powerful as fuck in terms of creating and making people feel amazing. Like, with your work, with your music, with your fashion. Like, you're obviously given a shit ton with your work. But this seems like a new evolution of that. Like, you'll continue to, you're kind of integrating, it seems, if I'm just interpreting, like a golden thread or something of purpose, or because that's what you're doing next, isn't it? With your next line of fashion, it's with the Indigenous.
Oh, so I'm helping with a charity called AIM.
Yeah,
have you heard of it before?
No.
It's Australian Indigenous Mentoring Experience. It stands for originally, or that's what it stands for. But it's a mentoring program to help disadvantaged kids, help them get through high school and on to university or further education.
Awesome.
So it's volunteer mentors from universities lend their hand to kids in high school and they mentor them throughout their high school career. It started 14 years ago by a kid named Jack Manning Bancroft. I went to talk with him about maybe us doing some stuff together and be on their AIM TV. They do an inspirational little TV clip they do before each of their programs. And then we just got talking and meeting went to another meeting and I was like, what can I do to help, dude? Like, he's the most impressive human being that I've ever met, for real.
How so?
His energy's great. He speaks so well. He's doing things. He's just doing it for the kids. And yeah, he's awesome. But anyway, I was like, what can I do to help? And he said, what can you do in your time? Like, there's a lot of things you could do to help with us. And I'm working on my own fashion. It's called For Your Consideration, which is because everything in the world is for your consideration, right? So you're for my consideration and this interview is for my consideration. small collections or considerations of clothing, just 3 to 6 pieces big per consideration, revolve around
consideration.
So good, right? Then it's also a news piece. It's like a news channel. So it's a daily Instagram story, maybe a YouTube channel. I'm not sure about the YouTube yet, but I think it's just an Instagram story and Instagram TV.
Yeah.
So it's a 1 minute clip on for your consideration. Like, so for the example that I've been having a lot of meetings about for your consideration. So one example, it's an easy one to say, is for your consideration today, the white rhino just died. So it happened the other day. For your consideration today is a white rhino. And then it talks about the journey of the rhino and then how it happened and talks about the poaching and talks about the environment. If you want to read more about it, then go here, here, and here and give them like reliable sources to read the like some real facts. And then go here, 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 and here if you want to donate time or money so this doesn't happen to many animals again. So it's daily news that is just shaking the bubble of the everyday news that you get from the big news players. It's not trendy news like Vice or BuzzFeed. It's like, it's got heart, but it also, it's music and culture and art and like, it's funny and
awesome.
Yeah, so every day it's just to give someone something for your consideration, just to spark us. It's like, I guess what I would like it to be is like a little seedling, a daily seedling in your mind to make you think about something else rather than what you'd be fed. Because everything is fed to you these days. Mm. Like the way that the internet works is like everyone is just looking at the same shit. So this is trying to like just break out of that bubble. And then we release the clothes as well. But it's like a news channel / clothing label, like something new.
Dude,
I'm feeling like it's new.
I'm feeling that. That's fucking sick.
I'm excited for it. So
it's kind of like conscious content, like content that helps people and informs them. And
then today's for your consideration is this t-shirt, which is our t-shirt, you know, right?
Mm.
So yeah, I'm excited. So I'm doing that. But also, yeah, working with AIM, which is super exciting. It makes me feel so good. And the kids are awesome. They're like all of them. They're really good friends of mine now. Came and visited me here in LA, and I spend all my spare time with them in Sydney. They're just the best kids, and it's really great. So AIM's launching in America next year.
Oh, right.
200 kids from colleges all across the states are flying back to Australia to learn the mentoring program.
Right.
So they're calling it the world's first festival of mentoring. So they've got 200 kids from colleges all across the states that somehow have got into college through adversity or struggle, and they're the lead mentors. And then Richard Branson gave them an airplane. He's flying out them, the 200 mentors and another 100 people on the plane, storytellers and artists. They're going to close the festival with a music concert. So they're doing the world's first festival of mentoring, and then they come back here and they enable 100 kids underneath them to mentor. So there'll be 20,000 kids in the States mentored next year.
Wow.
So I'm helping them with their apparel because they are all about the hoodie. So they sell hoodies with kids in the program in Australia at the moment, but next year they're going to be getting kids from every college. They'll choose one artwork from each of the colleges across America, so there'll be 200 different colleges. So 200 artworks, that's 200 different hoodies in one go. It's a lot of hoodies. Anyway, before they have the kids in the program next year, we're getting a lot of our artist friends to donate their art, and I'm just helping them with a lot of things, but mostly just helping them with the on the apparel side of things. So that's exciting. And then why were we talking about fashion anyway?
Or just the purpose embedded in your work with
fashion purpose. For your consideration, there's purpose to it. I didn't want to make clothes anymore.
Yeah,
I definitely didn't want to make clothes anymore, but I love designing clothes, and people need to wear good clothes. And there's great labels and stuff out there, but I don't feel bad about making clothes if you're making it for a reason, you know? I just didn't want to make stuff to meaningless shit, because that did not excite me. But now it excites me, because I love making clothes, and fashion's awesome, and I'm good at it, and I feel like I should be doing it, but now I've got a reason to do it, you know? So it's exciting.
And for your consideration, when's that launched?
End of the year.
Great.
I think we might launch the news in September, October.
Cool, man.
We are using recycled fabrics at the moment. Really good ethical factories. Won't all be recycled fabric, but we're kind of on that tip. As good as it can be for the planet.
Great.
We're releasing each consideration around the culturally relevant but completely irrelevant calendar, I like to call it, which is like Coachella, Burning Man, Mykonos, Summertime, La Fashion Week, you know, because all of these things, they're culturally relevant, but then completely irrelevant. They all were there for a reason in the beginning. They're all there for a reason now. I can't talk shit on these things because I'm totally involved in all of them. It's not, that's what I'm not trying to do. But
I know what you're
doing. They're all great. And unfortunately, they're all about influencers these days, and influence is my least favorite word of 2016, 2017, and 2018. I just don't get it. I just don't think it's right, and I'm not a fan.
Can you break that down for a moment?
Sorry, I don't know if I'm. Nah. So anyway, this is like I don't want it to be about influencers, but I would love it to be about Coachella, because there is a reason why Coachella is great. It's because it's a great music festival, and it's in a beautiful location, and great bands play there, but it's not all about Instagram photos. So we're going to I'm going to get ambassadors from each culturally relevant but completely irrelevant event, which will be an ambassador. So for Coachella, for example, it's two musicians that are bands that have played or are playing, or just music people that are there for music, not there because they've got a lot of followers on the Instagram. Fashion Week, it will be a model with a voice, or a magazine with a voice, you know, like people in it, there's just reason. People in it for a reason, you know. Burning Man, there's plenty of people at Burning Man for a reason, because Burning Man's fucking awesome. All these places were awesome before Instagram was invented, so I wanted to bring it back to show that part of it.
Awesome.
So there's, it's like,
so the essence of it, bringing it back to the essence.
Yeah. So it's still like, can't say that I'm all holy and pure now that I've had some chance to look back on what is important in life, because I'm still promoting a clothing brand around all of these events. So
yeah, well, integration's important, right?
Yeah, like, I'm not like trying to say that at all, but
I mean, that's where the point of relevancy as well is, like being, is playing in the playground.
Yeah.
Right. Like, well, you're not going to just go be in the mountains for the rest of your life. The whole purpose of play and the point of where you can bring life with your new state of awareness and wanting to help people is in the world. So you've got to be of the world.
Yeah.
It's the canvas.
Yeah.
And that's a fucking cool thing.
It's fun to be involved in. These things are awesome as well. All of them are great. And just because, well, I was nearly on the verge of like hating on these things because I just didn't want to be around the Instagram part of it. But well,
it's because then
I'm like, hang on, these things are awesome. Just like chill. People, they're all free. Like if you like being on Instagram, then that's cool. I can't hate on that either. You know what I mean? Like I'm not one to say that you can't do any of that stuff. And that let's all just have fun. Like I'll go and have fun without it and you go and have fun with it and we can all have fun together. That's what it's about. It's just all inclusive. Not being too cool that you go, oh, I'm not getting involved in that because that's just, like, that's not what it used to be.
Yeah.
That was so much better before, but it's not about that. It's just about enjoying it.
It's kind of just witnessing in it.
Yeah.
It's like, to me, my opinion on it is as well, it's just meaningless, frivolous, lacking in substance. And so there's no spirit or, like, real, the reason for being is just purely aesthetic, I guess. Or
It seems like that, but it's not really. And that's, you've got to, like, take a step back and go, hang on, it's still awesome. Just, you got to, I think all of it's fun.
Anyway, yeah.
It's just, it's going to be fun.
It's funny how you go through but it's like anyone on their own journey goes through own epiphanies of like, oh yeah, I feel like that about it now, but then you're right, I think the next evolution is always like, I just witness it, enjoy it for what it is. And like it's as soon as we bring boundaries up and go exclusivity, it's kind of where we alienate ourselves more.
Yeah,
fuck, I can't wait for seeing what you do next. And the music stuff is consistent.
Yeah, music's great. Yeah, so I've been DJing a lot over here. I love DJing. I never DJed sober ever. I would never remember the last song I played. I'd probably never leave a club with a USB key, but now I have a great time. I didn't think I would, but DJing's just still awesome fun.
Are you putting frequencies in there that awaken the chakras within people?
We talked about it the other day, actually.
As the undertone of people just have Kundalini experiences.
Yeah, right? Not yet.
We talked about it the other day. I love that. Thanks, man.
No worries.
Fucking honor your journey and appreciate everything that you shared.
Lovely to share it.
Much love.
Yeah. Mwah.